Once again, good morning, family. It's always a pleasure to meet a group of new old friends. You know, I grew up in Michigan. I graduated from Great Lakes Christian College. I serve on the Board of Trustees for the second time there now, as my father did many years ago. Growing up at Kalkaska and then Big Rapids, the Rogers Heights Church there. It's just such a pleasure to be home. I appreciate your young minister here and his family so much. I always try to bring a word of encouragement or maybe just a little wisdom to the young ministers. So you can kind of pass this on for me. And remember this and let him know what I said. You know, Vivian and I, we travel a lot together. We came to Holt on Thursday night for a meeting about the adult retreat at Rock Lake. We're on that committee, have been for a number of years, and invite you all to come to that retreat. Michigan Christian Convention for 2 days, and as I told the people in the first hour, my brother-in-law, married to my sister Jeannie, Art Bush, received the Divine Servant Award, the high, beautiful award from Great Lakes. And here we are this morning to share with you. So we drive a lot of miles together. The old Trailblazer out here has almost 345,000 miles on it. And so here's one of the things I've learned. You pass it on to Josh, okay? It's kind of handy to know what kind of mood the lady is in who is riding next to you. You don't want that to take you by surprise. So here's the hint. Here's the lesson. I bought her a mood ring. When she wears it, when she's in a good mood, it turns a pretty bright blue. And when she's in a really foul mood, it leaves a little red mark on my forehead, right about here. Okay? You share that with him now, okay? She might be pretty, but she's mean. Ooh, now I'm in trouble. I heard that murmur out there. The text today is from Acts, the 8th chapter, the 26th through the 31st verses. It's one of my favorite stories from the book of Acts. Now an angel of the Lord said to Philip, "Rise and go toward the south to the road that goes down from Jerusalem to Gaza. This is a desert place." And he rose and went, and there was an Ethiopian, a eunuch, a court official of Candace, queen of the Ethiopians, who was in charge of her treasure. He had come to Jerusalem to worship, and was returning, seating in his chariot, and he was reading the prophet Isaiah. And the Spirit of the Lord said to Philip, "Go over and join this chariot." And so Philip ran to him and heard him reading Isaiah the prophet, and said to him, "Do you understand what you're reading?" And he said, "How can I, except someone should guide me?" And he invited Philip to come up and sit with them. I say to you that in God's providence, that it just seems right. Now, I think that that's presumptuous of us to second guess God's directive in this, but it just seems right. We understand why it's right that God should have said to Philip, "Go and join yourself to this chariot and share with this man the gospel." If God is a God, and he is, of those who diligently seek him, this man should have received some assistance here. Have you ever looked at how far it is from Ethiopia up to Jerusalem? Wow. Here he was, an important official of the Ethiopians, traveled all the way to Jerusalem to follow and to learn a religion that was not part of his personal heritage. He was reading from the prophet Isaiah in a place that he didn't even he was redeeming the time. You know what? I drive along a lot of miles, and I try to redeem the time. I listen to the news once in a while. You know what? I like to listen to DVDs of seminars and things like that. I use it for think time. This fellow was riding in his chariot, and he was redeeming the time. He's going to spend a lot of time on the road going back to Ethiopia. And so he was redeeming the time, and beyond that, he was reading in a place that he didn't even understand. How many of us study the scripture and we read this and we say, "I don't know, I don't understand that." and we flip over to something that's a little easier to get our heads around. He's reading in a place that he didn't understand. Come all the way up from Ethiopia to worship in a place that was not a part of his spiritual heritage. But he was a diligent seeker after the wisdom of God. And so as he was riding back home in his chariot, back to great responsibility, being the queen's treasurer of all her resources, and Philip came up and joined himself to the chariot, and he asked the question, do you understand what you're reading? Now, he was reading in Isaiah, the 53rd chapter. The 53rd chapter of Isaiah is often called the Old Testament Gospel, because there is so much prophecy here about the coming of the Messiah. That he'd be bruised, but he would not be broken, that he would give his life as atonement. And it was thought by many skeptics that because that chapter is so specific in its description of Jesus, that it had to have been written after Jesus lived. That's the skeptics' take on it. But when they found the Dead Sea Scrolls that predated the time of Christ, you know what they found? The 53rd chapter was there. So he was reading about Isaiah, and Philip said, do you understand what you're reading? He says, is he talking about himself or some other person? And the scripture tells us that he opened the scripture and taught him from the same passage. He taught him about Jesus. But here is the exchange that brings us to the title of the sermon. The Ethiopian eunuch said, Philip said, how do you understand what you're reading? And the man said, how can I, except someone should guide me? Someone should guide. It just seems right that someone should guide. Now, I want to tell you that I don't think that it makes a lot of difference whether it is a first century Ethiopian dignitary returning home to a position of great responsibility in the Queen's Court, or whether it's 21st century man or woman. Whether it's a grown man or woman, or whether it's a little boy or girl who needs help or needs a home, the same thing is true, that someone should guide. Someone should guide. You know, at the Woodburn Christian Children's Home, we live that every single day. That is the job that we've been called to do. Sometimes to take a boy or a girl who has not received much guidance and to teach them what it means to be responsible, what it means to be a child of God, what it means to be an overcomer rather than a victim. I'm thinking of kids like Eric. You know, Eric's brother called me, Vivian, just the other day, Michael Scheip. Our kids from the children's home, they don't forget us when they grow up and they're on their own. Michael and Eric lived with us probably 25 years ago. And not long ago, Eric called me and said, can we go out to lunch? He was back in the area. He'd moved out of state and he was back. And we did. Now, I haven't seen Eric yet. But here was Eric's approach to life. Vivian, we've done this a few times before. Suppose I'm Eric and I've got something in my hand that I'm not supposed to have, okay? Vivian, tell me to put it down.
Eric, put that book down.
Put it down?
Yes. I want you to put it down on the table.
On the table? That table? You got the picture? You know Eric, don't you? You know what? I have a vast reservoir of energy to see that gets from there to there by Eric's hand. Okay? That's part of discipline. That's part of teaching a kid as he grows. Someone should be there to teach him that there is a matter of responsibility in life, and when someone in authority tells you to do something, it just ought to be done. Other kids that we think of along the way, we think of Bob Hickel. How many of you saw the DVD with Bob Hickel in it? Okay. Would you recommend that the others take one of the DVDs home and watch that? Bob's quite a guy. Man, I'll tell you, he thought fast on his feet. He always had an answer for you. He's a good dad now. with six kids of his own. And we told some stories, and you saw it. I'm not going to tell you the stories. You have to pick up the video for yourselves. But you're going to enjoy that. It's an interview with a young man who grew up at his children's home, now grown up with all those kids of his own. There is justice in this world. My favorite question of Bob is, having trouble, son? At any rate, he loves to come with me and make presentations. And we got a lot of grown-up kids like that. What could I tell you about Bob? I'll tell you the one story from the DVD. I had been out traveling and doing what I'm doing today, and I was on my way home. Vivian called me. I said on the car phone, you got to realize this is a bag phone. This is back in those days, okay? And she said, you know, I got Bob here, and he did something. I can't remember what it was. And when I got home and came in the door, I was over in Illinois making a presentation. I came in the door. Bob says, boy, Mr. Bracey, I'll bet I feel almost as badly as if you'd actually disciplined me for what I did. Wow. Sharp. Thinking fast on his feet. I said, well, Bob, we're going to get a chance to compare. Oh, listen. Why do we do that? Why do we go to the trouble? Why, when a kid misbehaves, do we get up out of the chair and make sure that that rule is enforced? When they don't bring their homework home from school to make sure that it is actually done and the dog didn't eat it in their locker, how the dog got in the locker and ate it, I'll never know, is that we get in the van. We charge them a couple of bucks from their allowance for gas and we go back to get it. That takes time. That takes energy. Why do we do it? Because someone should guide. Just like with that Ethiopian dignitary a couple thousand years ago. It just seems right that someone should guide. Someone should guide. I'm thinking of another kid from up around Elk Rapids. And we take kids from at the children's home from all over the United States. It's a pretty unique program, and they come through churches and individuals just like you. So if you know a boy or girl who needs help or not, needs a home, you let us know. Sean McManus lets me tell his story. He was placed through the church at Kalkaska. And Sean, we had another name for, Eddie Haskell. How many recognize the name Eddie Haskell? Leave it to Beaver, you know, hello, Mr. Cleaver, hello, Mrs. Cleaver. You know, and he's all full of compliments, and what happens when you turn your back? Oh, man, he'll get you. Well, Sean was like that. We always have an Eddie at the children's home. It's entertainment. And it doesn't bother us very much at all. We know that God can take people like that and they can sell. And you know what? They're good ambassadors of the gospel. And Sean was there on grounds for a number of years. Now he's down in Florida with his family of his own. And I got a message from him on Facebook the other day just thanking us for all we've done for him. You know, we had a group of kids at the children's home from Indianapolis, and they'd come up for a work day. We have lots of people come on grounds for work days. We have people come to bring us food for the pantry and collections, things like that, and some just to visit. And a group of kids and their sponsors had come up from Indianapolis, and they were doing a work project for a weekend. And one of the youth coaches came to one of our house dads and said, you should know that one of your boys, Sean, a.k.a. Eddie, has told one of our kids, our girls, he's trying to impress her, this place is just like a prison. Just like a prison. And so I went home and talked to Vivian. I said, you know, I'm not preaching anywhere this weekend. It's a rare occurrence, but I'm not preaching anywhere. How about if we go on up, Sean is going up home for a home visit this weekend, why don't we go on up to Kalkaska and let him know that I have a pretty long reach? And I called his mom, and I called Dan Johnson, the minister at that time up there, has been for a long, long time, and we set it up, and when he came into church Sunday morning, we were sitting in the pew, and he went, and I went. And afterwards, we went downstairs, and we'd set it up. Everybody knew what it was about. And we sat down at a table there. There was his mom, single mom, who needed help with this young man. And the minister and one of the elders, a retired Marine, myself, I think you were there too. And I said, how are things at the children's home, Sean? He says, oh, they're wonderful, Mr. Bracey. They're just wonderful. It's a wonderful place. By the way, is that a new tie? That's a really nice tie. I said, well, yeah, that's, I'm glad to hear that, but you know, I'm kind of confused. And I laid my cell phone out on the table and I said, you know, one of our staff left me a voicemail. Of course, I'd asked that he leave it for me. And he said something about somebody telling one of our kids that this place is just like a prison, to which Sean responded. And so we had a talk. We had a talk about bearing false witness, about letting our yeas be yea and our nays be nay. And you know, Sean grew up to be such a fine young fellow. When he returned home, and after graduation, I would go up there, and when I'd go up for the Northman, I'd take him out to dinner, take him out to lunch. And after a while, he'd take me out to lunch. And then I'd take his family out, or him and his wife. What a blessing that was. A few years ago, Dan Johnson called me, and he said, Bracey, you always tell me that you'll do anything for these kids. I said, I will. He says, Sean and his family moved out to Washington State. And his mother had found somebody that was good to her and married. But then he had cancer and he's just passed away. And the folks out in the church where he's very active have provided for Sean to come back. He's flying into Gerald Ford Airport tonight. And he needs someone to pick him up and get him over to the funeral on the other side of the state tomorrow morning, late morning. You think I had some other things to do? Of course. I said, Dan, I'll be there. I picked up Sean at the airport. We sat and talked for a couple hours at the IHOP, and then we listened to each other snore all night long at a Comfort Inn. Then I went to a funeral that for someone I'd never met. Why? Because he's one of our kids. Someone should guide. Someone should guide. I think of people like Amber. Now, we got a call one time. This was a long time ago from one of the bus drivers. Says, this is Don Rackaway. And I just have a simple request. One of your girls is on the bus ahead of mine on the route between the two schools. They bring them to the high school, and then they took them to the grade school. And would you just tell Amber that when she waves to me from the back window of the bus ahead, that I would take it very kindly if she would use all the fingers on both her hands. Well, yes, of course we'll deal with that. Why do I thrive on that? Because it just seems right. Those kids haven't received their guidance. It just seems right, whether it's a first century dignitary going home to be the queen's treasurer, or whether it's a little boy or a little girl that never got taught how to behave. Someone should guide. Someone should guide. You know, and so at the children's home, another thing we talked about this morning with regard to Bob Hickle was a particular teachable moment. You'll have to get the did I mention you have to get the DVD to hear the full story? About the shoes. That was a teachable moment, wasn't it? That was a teachable moment. I love a teachable. It's when the light comes on and that person is more receptive to instruction than at any other time. We live for the teachable moment at the Woodburn Christian Children's Home. One of my favorite stories from the Old Testament is the story of Joshua. He's about to cross the Jordan River. The feet of the priests who bear the Ark of the Covenant touch that river, and it backs up upstream against a gigantic invisible dam, and the people once again walk across on dry ground. You realize that God demonstrated his endorsement of Moses 40 years before by parting the sea. And now with Joshua, He parts the waters again and shows who his chosen leader is. And the people are told, I believe there were two altars, but one of them was the result of a man from each tribe picking up a stone from the midst of the Jordan and making an altar beside the river on the west side of the river. And it was an altar to commemorate this event. There were many altars and pillars erected in the Old Testament that were for a memorial. And I see in my rather active imagination, generations later, a grandpa and his little grandson on a walk beside the Jordan River. The little boy doesn't know where they're going, but grandpa's steering him toward the altar. And the boy's doing what a boy does. He's picking up the leaves and the rocks. He's skipping them into the river, and he's chasing the little animals around. And I see that the river is swollen at flood stage like it was back in that day. And I see that little guy's eyes get real big as they part the brush, and there it is right in front of him. And he fairly dances around that altar, and he says, "Grandpa, look at this. What's it for? Did it just happen? Did someone build it? What does it mean?" And once again, that grandpa has the wonderful opportunity of the teachable moment. An opportunity to tell his grandson about God's miraculous provision for his people as God parted the waters once again and they entered into the promised land. I live for the teachable moment. And we have teachable moments just like that in our service and in our everyday life. The communion that we shared today is a teachable moment for many people who come into this fellowship and do not know the meaning of what we celebrate here today. In another lifetime in youth ministry, before I became the director at the children's home, I did a lot of youth ministry and bus ministry. You bring in kids that have no connection with church, 100 at a time, and you get some pretty remarkable comments. And I remember one time when we brought them upstairs from junior church for a baptism, and there was one of the little girls says, "Boy, did she get it!" You know, when she came up out of the water, and you know, communion, observe communion, and they say, "Hey, minister, hey, youth minister, can I have some refreshments too?" Well, what an opportunity to take those questions and to use them for teachable moments on the bus ride on the way home. Well, you know, teachable moments. You live for those opportunities. You know, even with our own children when they were small, Tammy, one day when she was just a little girl, she liked to carry. She's a mom now and a kid in college, but when she was just a little girl, she carried her New Testament around with her, and she loved the pictures. She wasn't old enough to read yet. And she brought it to me one day, and it was a picture of Jesus on the cross between the two thieves. And she pointed to the picture of the one in the middle, and she said, "Who is that, Dad?" And I said, "It's a picture of Jesus." Do you know what she asked? She said, "What's he doing?" I said, "He's hanging on a cross." You know what she asked? She says, "Does it hurt?" I said, "Yes, honey. It hurt. It hurt so badly that he died, but he came back to life again. And it's by this act that we have our sins taken away." And our daughter was baptized. Years later, when she was old enough to understand it completely, as was our son and all of our grandchildren, as they come up to the right age, what a blessing that is to be presented with the teachable moment. Our son Jeremy, I remember when he was a little guy, he came bounding down to my office downstairs at the church at Warsaw, where Josh is from, saying, Dad, there's sins floating on the top of the baptistry." You know what had happened. Somebody hadn't cared for the baptistry water quite as they ought, so we went up, and I said, "Yeah, look at that. That's a big one. That must have been a minister baptized in there." Yeah. No, I didn't. Isn't it wonderful that the Scripture anticipates that question, even in a little boy's mind, when it says that baptism is not taking a bath? It's not the putting of the way of the filth of the flesh. It doesn't leave a bathtub ring. Teachable moments. Live for them. I had a little guy come up to me after the church service the other day and tug on my coat as I was shaking hands out the back door. And I got down in front of him, looked him in the eye in my best youth ministerial style. And he said, well, he pointed the plaque. He says, what's that? There's a plaque on the wall. And I said, well, son, let me see. Oh, that's a plaque commemorating all the people that died in the service. You know what he asked? The morning service or the evening service? Teachable moments are not always all that they're cracked up to be. But the same thing is, nevertheless, the same thing is true, that someone should guide. Someone should guide. Now, teachable moments occur in a different way generally for those of us who are older. I remember when our daughter-in-law came up behind me as I was working on a sermon and read some of the texts there, and she already knew some things about the gospel. But she said, you know, if I died tonight, I don't know what would happen. And I had the wonderful opportunity to teach her how it is that Jesus gave his life and she can have the benefit of the ransom being paid so that she could have eternal life. Teachable moments don't always come so easily for people who are older. So many stories and so little time, but I'll tell you this. Teachable moments for those of us who are older come when life does this. Okay? And the Bible tells us, unless you become like a little kid, you'll not enter into the kingdom of heaven. Unless you're teachable and open to instruction like a little child is, and willing to hear and willing to learn. Pray that God will soften your hearts so that he may teach you as a little child. We live for the teachable moment at the Woodburn Christian Children's Home because someone should guide. Someone should guide. I want to talk to you for a moment about the urgency of the task. There are certain things that occur in life that once they happen, you are never the same. Many years ago, when I was working at Boulevard Church in Toledo alongside, I'd been working with Hugh York, and then John Hastie came to be the senior minister there. And I went in the hospital as a young dad of a couple of children who were very small for what we thought was probably a ruptured appendix, but it was not. It was a ruptured colon, and it had been ruptured for a long time, and I was thoroughly filled with the infection. I spent weeks in the hospital not knowing whether I would live or die. That's a pretty teachable moment, folks. And things were never the same since then. I've always figured I was in extra innings. But here I was in the hospital, and I was the guy that always breezed in and said, hey, you're looking better today. Can I say a prayer for you? And now, I was the guy laying in the hospital bed, deathly ill. And it was three of our elders, Bob Fulton, Bob Beasley, and Bob Stewart, that came to be by my bedside after I was there for nearly a week and said, you know what? We don't know how this is going to be resolved. We don't know how things are going to work out here. But we want you to know, since we have known of this, and to this time, and until you are out of this, we haven't eaten. And we're going to be fasting for you until this is resolved. And for that, Bob Fulton, Bob Beasley, and Bob Stewart will always be my friend. I learned other things in the hospital. You know, I'll tell you something else. It was time when people had their coats and things. I don't even know now what time of year it was, but it must have been cool out. At any rate, I was in a four-bed ward. And when it got to be so predictable that people would always pray before they left, that when they would get their hats and their coats, the other three guys in the room would automatically go. And I remember after that a number of times, the man in the bed next to me, a big, tall, African-American fellow, came over and sat in a chair next to my bed and said, "Will you teach me to pray? I don't know how to pray." And I prayed the Lord's Prayer with him. And the next time those men came into my room, they took my hand on this side, and across a curtain went back, and there was my friend's hand. These things change you. They're teachable moments, folks. There are some things I learned. Here's three things I learned in the hospital. Funny cards come in long envelopes. I didn't say they were important things. Second thing I learned is that two hospital gowns are better than one. Any questions? The third thing is never let a nurse pack gauze in your wound when Tom Selleck is on TV. She gets all excited, forgets what she's doing, pushes hard, and it hurts like the dickens. I used to turn my television off when she came in to do that. But I also learned what it was to be ministered to rather than always the minister. And I was reminded of the urgency of the task of passing on my faith to my children. I couldn't see them for all those weeks. That's back when kids didn't come to hospital rooms. And so I asked for a tape recorder so that I could leave a message for my children. And to leave this message, Tammy, Jeremy, if you hear this, I've gone to be in heaven. And if I've got a chance to tell you a few things, I want to tell you these. Follow Jesus all the days of your life and never turn back from following him, and I'll see you in heaven someday. If someone in the church disappoints you, shake it off. Follow Jesus. If someone in the church offends you, forgive them. Follow Jesus. If you mess up, and you will, pray to God, ask for forgiveness, let him pick you up, get on the road to heaven, and I'll see you someday. Now, my children never heard that tape, but they know what I've told them because I've told them again and again and again. My mom and dad, who lived in Big Rapids, came down and just stayed. And after I was out of the hospital, Dad asked me to help him buy a good tape recorder. And I did, and I didn't know what he had in mind, but he gave to me and to Art and to Jean, to our families, and I'm going to make some copies on DVD for Christmas this year for all the grandkids. He gave us a copy of the New Testament on cassette. But it's different from the one you may have in your home on DVDs now. It's recorded in my mother and father's voice. And at the beginning of that tape, all those tapes, is this. We're Leon and Nettie Bracey. We live in Big Rapids, Michigan. And this is our testimony to our children, to our grandchildren, to ones that we will never meet this side of heaven, that we love Jesus more than life itself. And we want you to follow him all the days of your life. And we'll see you in heaven someday. It took a lot of work, folks. A lot of work to do that. But I'll tell you this, it's worth it. Because someone should guide. Someone should guide. We're responsible for children who put chocolate fingers everywhere, who like to be tickled, who stomp in puddles and ruin their new pants, who sneak popsicles before supper, who erase holes in math workbooks, and who can never find their shoes. And we're responsible for those who stare at at photographers from behind barbed wire, who can't bound down the stairs in a new pair of sneakers, who are born in places you wouldn't be caught dead in, who never go to the circus, who live in an X-rated world. We're responsible for children who bring us sticky kisses and fists full of dandelions, who sleep with the dog and bury goldfish, who hug us in a hurry and forget their lunch money, who cover themselves with Band-Aids and sing off-key, who squeeze toothpaste all over the sink, who slurp their soup. And we're responsible for those who never get dessert, who have no safe blanket to drag about, who watch their parents watch them die, who can't find any bread to steal, who don't have any rooms to clean, whose pictures aren't on anybody's dresser, whose monsters are real. We're responsible for children who spend all of their allowance before Tuesday, who throw tantrums in the grocery store, who shove dirty clothes under their beds and never rinse out the tub, who get visits from the tooth fairy, who don't like to be kissed in front of their friends, who squirm in church and scream on the phone, whose tears we sometimes laugh at and whose smiles can make us cry. And we are responsible for those whose nightmares come in the daytime, who will eat anything, who have never seen a dentist, who aren't spoiled by anybody, who go to bed hungry and cry themselves to sleep, and who will never know Jesus, unless someone should guide. Someone should guide. It's a story, just a story as far as I know. But I think it teaches an essential lesson. It was a privately owned motel, not one of the chain things. It had been passed on a generation or so within the family, and it was one in which the family took great pride of providing a clean place and a good place to spend the night for a single couple or a family. And the lady who owned the motel now was out working in the flower garden in front of the office when an old pickup truck pulled up on the drive. She looked this thing over. It was an old, rusty truck. And there were things loaded up in the bed of this thing, all the possessions that one family might own, spilling over the sides and lashed here and there with rope. She looked inside the cab, and there were more people in that cab than ought to be in that cab. There was a dad behind the wheel and a mom with a little baby held close and sundry and assorted children packed in about. It pulled to a stop in front of the office. The driver's side door opened up, and the dad stretched himself out in the late afternoon sun. Quick as a flash by his side was a little boy, obviously his son, the spitting image of his father, almost as though he was attached. The man approached the woman and said, "How much for a room for the night, ma'am?" "We hadn't intended to stop. You see, I've been out of work for a long time, but I've got the promise of a new job, a new life for my family down the road a ways, and we're on our way to a new promise, a promise of a new life. But I hadn't intended to stop, ma'am, but my wife is tired and the baby's tired. I'm afraid if I don't stop, somebody's going to be sick. How much for a room for the night?" She quickly calculated in her mind the balance of what it would take to pay for the room and what it costs to prepare it and how much of a discount to give and yet save face for the man. All of those things came through her mind, and she specified a price, and the man nodded his head in agreement with a look of relief on his face and drew from his pocket an old kind of change purse that opens up, leather purse that opens up like a flower. And there he pulled from it dollar bills that had been saved for a rainy day. Put them in her hand, and she was warmed and encouraged by the fact that she was able to minister to this family. She gave them extra blankets and pillows and saw to it that they were comfortable for the night. Then later on that evening, there was a knock on her door, and there was the dad with the little boy right at his side. And he says, "Ma'am, the rest of us are fine, but can I buy some milk for the baby?" She wouldn't hear of it. She made sandwiches for them all and took things down for them to drink. And she just felt good when they got back in that old truck and pulled away from that grease spot on the drive in the morning. She busied herself throughout the day, and she looked out the window of the office, and there came the truck from the direction in which it had gone. And it pulled up the same spot in the drive. And she was concerned. She couldn't see the little boy inside. And again, the dad got out, but no little boy. She looked inside, and there he was. He was okay. But he was reluctant to get out this time. But his dad motioned, he said, "Come on out, son." The boy stood a ways off, this time looking down. And she said, "Why did you return? Did you have car trouble? Did you have trouble with the truck? Is someone sick? Did you forget something that's essential?" He says, "No, ma'am, none of those things." He says, "Son, show her what you have." The little boy reached in his pocket and held something in his closed hand. He says, "Show her, son." And he opened it up, and it was a little bar of soap, individually wrapped, like you would find in a hotel room. And the dad said, "Tell her what you did, son." He said, "I took it, ma'am." And she was beside herself. She said, "You mean you've wasted gas? You've wasted your time? You've made yourself more exhausted than you were. You've taken trouble for nothing to come back and to bring to me something that was there for you to use? Something for you could even take it if you want to take it. Didn't you know that?" To which the wise and loving father responded, "Yes, ma'am. I knew that, and you knew that, but my little boy didn't know that." How do you pass on your faith and values to the next generation? You do it with love, you do it with consistency, and sometimes you do it at considerable personal cost. May God bless us and give us the victory as we raise our children and our grandchildren to live their lives for Him. God bless you, family. It's a pleasure to be with you today.